As I wrote in the Prairie Fire, my trip to the Andes was kind of to fill in some gaps in my education. And it's hard to do sometimes to look at a country or a continent such as South America with all that's going on, all that we hear about in the papers, and all the issues that we're concerned about with Latin America. It's kind of hard sometimes to go and just appreciate a culture without all these other things coming in and say, oh, I just really wish that, you know, something could be done or whatever. And so what I've tried to do today is to separate that out a little bit. Say, all right, first I want to express that I have some concerns politically about what's going on in Latin America and kind of get that out of the way. And then the presentation today, as much as possible, will be a cultural view of South America and the Andean area. So I'm going to try to stick to culture. So if questions come up about, well, what are we doing here or whatever, we'll kind of let that slide today, not demeaning it or saying it's not important, it's very important, but we want to kind of put that out of the way right now on the show and say, today we're not really going to look at that issue, but we're going to try to look at the culture and the uniqueness of the Andean culture. We're going to have a few of our younger people join in, and we'll have some music as we go along too, so we'll have slides and we'll have a little things along with it. This is starting out. The Andes that you often see is the real snow-capped Andes. You kind of see the eastern or the western parts of the Andes where the snow is, but there's another side of the Andes that's really just hot and dry because the moisture just doesn't get there for various reasons. Part of it is what we've heard about El Nino, the current that runs through there, and a lot of things that take place. So part of the Andes is really dry. And then another part, you do get the glaciers that just never melt. So they have two different kind of Andean chains. This is Inti Illimani. You often hear the group Inti Illimani. Well, this is where they took their name from, this mountain, the Mountain of the Sun. This is La Paz. I went down to Bolivia to kind of start because that is the kind of first parts of the real Andean culture that we hear about. So this is La Paz, and it's deceptive here, but it's actually sitting right down in a bowl. And the main street is at level. Anywhere you go off the main street, you're going uphill. And this is at about 12,000 feet as it is, so you start walking up a hill that's pretty steep, and you feel it. It took me a few days to get adjusted here to the climate, the altitude. And there's Inti Illimani in the background again, looking over La Paz. And it's kind of like, I guess they say in the state of Washington, some places, when the sun is out, it's warm, and when the clouds come, it cools down. So that's how it is here. You have to wear something and keep putting it on and off all day. I stayed up in a small Indian hotel up in the Indian Quarter, and you can see looking down the street towards the center of town that it goes about a block and then just drops right off. You kept going straight, you could walk right on top of the tower there on the church. So it really drops quickly. It was six blocks up this hill. Took a little bit to get up there. Well, La Paz is a city that's about a million people, and it's 85%, the population, 85% Indian people now. And there is a division there, though, between the kind of the old standards of who gets to go where. Like the European people live down in the bottom of the city, which is contrary to most schemes that you have of the city because it's better climate down there and you don't have to climb around. The Indians live up on the edge of the city or up the hills. This park was a kind of a unique park, this Murillo Park. It was situated on the border, kind of between the European section and the Indian section, and it's right in front of the city hall. And so this is it's a distinction. It's the lowest elevation park that's open, kind of an Indian park, or the highest elevation park that's a European park, you know, because it's right on the borderline there. So most of the higher parks are for Indians and the lower parks are for the Europeans. They kind of set it up that way. So this is right on the border. So there is a little bit of separatism going on down there. And this is what I went down to see. This is the Gateway of the Sun. And this was built somewhere around 1 to 300 AD, somewhere in that area. And this is supposedly what started this culture called Tiwanaku. This is the site of Tiwanaku. This culture was supposed to have started the kind of the organization of the Andes, unlike it had ever been before. And they're not really sure what all this is about. They call this the Gateway of the Sun, but the figure is not really a sun figure. It's an old god that they took from another culture, the Shabin culture, and it's called a staff god. And he's holding two staffs on each side. And this is a common god. It was just a common local god that people kind of picked up on. And so they have this called the Gateway of the Sun now, and no one really knows for sure who this god is. The figures on the side, I'll show you a little bit better description of them in the next slide or so. It's a calendar. They figure now it's a calendar on cycles of, they don't know what, but usually these are working around when a new ruler is going to come in or something's going to happen with their kingdom. So this is a calendar, and they don't really know exactly, again, what this was all about, but it's the most famous thing in Bolivia as far as motifs and things that they use. And these motifs are spread all through the Andes. Again, no one knows what it's all about. This is, again, the motif that they use in Bolivia in some of their modern buildings, using the sun. And they put snake, they have snakes kind of all around as decoration. That's another very common thing from this era. These are the runners, supposedly. Tiwanaku, the culture, was organized. They don't know how they organized it. They don't know what happened because there's no writing back then, and everything's been destroyed that could give them any idea. And the Incas came along without writing, and the Incas rewrote history when they came along, starting in the 1200s, but more in the 1400s. They just completely rewrote history. And they had no writing either, so they just changed the oral tradition. So a lot of this is lost. But the figure on the far left is a condor. It's supposed to be a messenger, it's a condor. And the next one is a man, and that's the runner. And these runners supposedly went around Tiwanaku carrying messages and things. And the Incas used the same system when they finally got their empire together, 700 years later. So there's vestiges of the Incan Empire starting already, way back in these times. This right here is the actual style right there. I think you'll see a lot of these, kind of have some similarities in those motifs. They also have the condor and the man, the condor and the man. Matchy, afterwards you can look at a vase I brought too that's previous to this culture even, that really looks Eskimo too. So this is the actual site of Tiwanaku. It's not been restored much at all. The swimming pool-like place was a temple. And it was covered over in some respects. They don't know really how it looked. And some people have made some very poor attempts at reconstruction of this site, so it's not all exactly as it should be. Archaeologists haven't been able to find enough to put it together. The Gateway of the Sun was just dug out of the ground in 1906. They unearthed it in 1906. So it hasn't been standing around as a shrine for all those years. A lot of this has just been excavated recently. Just beginning to. It's kind of a national park now, but it's taken a long time to really get it together.
It looks like the
this
land
is right
is
in the flat area of the Andes. It's just one long 70-mile prairie like. That's coming next. That's the big thing. This is looking from down in that swimming pool area, which was a temple. And the figures, the little heads all around the side of it, were supposed to be representing tribes that would come into this area and give tribute. And so they know that there was some sort of organization that took place. The big stone in the back, you can see that big doorway, I'll show you a close-up of that. That's the thing that they really are concerned about because the stone is so large and they had to bring it some places 6 kilometers from where they cut it. Overland, they had no animals that could carry these things because the alpaca and the llama aren't very strong. They have little tiny legs. They can't carry anything or pull anything. So they had to do this by human power. They had no levers, no pulleys, no winches, nothing, but maybe ropes and that they made out of the vines there and themselves. So they figured this is a tremendous organization that took place to bring this together. That gives them an idea that there was a real organization. Because of the immensity of this. They figured that was real. That's the real construction, as it should be. Yeah, it was unearthed, but it was put together. The archaeologists are happy with that. Now, there is speculation that extraterrestrials came here. And they get into this thing, well, look at this. goggle eyes, kind of like our space people, you know, the things they wear. So, yeah, and the turban kind of thing, you know, that's a... So anyway, they speculate, some people do, that, well, this is where they came. And then you look at these stone, I mean, these are very large. And they polished these with sand. They didn't have any tools back then that they could really use for polishing, because they hadn't really got into smelting things yet. The Incas picked this up, and they brought people from Tiwanaku, this area, the Aymara people, the Bolivian people, to the Incan Empire, and kind of revived the stone polishing that they had. Some of these stones are absolutely glass smooth. You just wouldn't believe how smooth they could be, with no tools. And so the Incas picked this up 700 years later and brought this, revived this stone polishing. The Incas did the same thing. They put their emphasis on the important parts of it, and then the rest of it, they kind of did whatever they needed to do to get the building together. Oh, it was definitely, that was a class society, and the craftspeople and the artisans definitely were very high ranked, especially schooled and chosen for that. It's about 15 feet high. So you look at that monolithic piece along the side, and think of the weight of that, and carrying that around, and putting that lintel up on top. What you have to do is put that up on top. That's also something. This is a god back then, again, a staff god holding two things. They don't know really what this was. The Spanish came, and the people were still kind of giving veneration to this one. And the Spanish, wherever they would go, they would take the Incan sites or the older sites and put a little temple up there or a crucifix so that it was sanctified. Then when the people worshipped it, they said, well, they're not really worshipping this old god, they're worshipping the real one. On this one, on the right shoulder, they carved a little crucifix and a little triangle, and he has a little tattoo on his right shoulder, so he's been sanctified. So this god's okay. They don't know who it is or what it was all about. No records. This is another one. You can see here, again, I tell you this, it's a flat, plain area here. It's about 70 miles. The mountains are in the background. So it's in the flat part of the foothills of the Andes. Yeah, out on this plain, it was just really, you know, you just walk along and it had just been a flat area that had been filled in over the years, because the site had been abandoned for about 700 years. And so, until the Inca came along, and even then, they feel that the Inca really didn't find all this. They knew of it, but they really didn't know exactly what was there. So it just had been covered over, as civilizations tend to have happened to them. You know, they go out of style, and people move on. The whole southern part of Peru, after this empire collapsed, there were no cities in southern Peru for 700 years. Just little farming areas, but no cities for 700 years until the Inca came along in southern Peru. So I say, this, they, again, they look at this one and say, this could be an extraterrestrial. This is kind of a unique thing. There was a big, one big area where people, the religious people and the higher people would meet, and they would have someone speak. And then the lower caste people would have to stay outside. And this rock is amazing because it has like a nautilus shape on the other side. And so the people on this side of the building will speak. It will go through that little hole and it will amplify outside. I was inside speaking, and these guys, three Bolivians I was traveling with, were out there, and they could just hear me just fine. If I moved to the side of that rock, they couldn't hear me. But when I was kind of standing in front there, it really amplified all through the area and out to them. It was really amazing that they had some amplification for the lower class people. But wait, what's this? From the extraterrestrial world? New archaeological evidence? Yes! Uncovered! Now, they really don't have much evidence to support that extraterrestrial beings carry these stones around, like they said. So. This is a place outside of La Paz. It's called the Mountains of the Moon. And it's a very fertile valley for agriculture. And these erosion has taken place, and this soil is very fertile. So it's washed down the valley. And it's supposed to be the richest place in La Paz for agriculture. It looks kind of ominous, but it's a very nice place for agriculture. It's good lighting that day. No, that's during the day. It was a strange lighting, like I say. This is from Tiwanaku, kind of looking back towards La Paz. You can see Inti Illimani in the background there. So you get an idea of some of, you know, there are flat valleys, the high Andean plateaus. There are a lot of these areas that are quite flat. It's the snow and the rain that comes from the snow, since this is an area where you would get rain-fed agriculture. About 11,000 feet, somewhere around there. This is going across Lake Titicaca. Went from Bolivia across the lake on a boat. And the lake is amazing because you get one side, you can hardly see the other side, but then this mountain starts rising out over across the lake over there. The Spanish built a little city there called, I always forget the name of this, I was confused, Cochabamba. And the Spanish, when they came to the New World, had just driven the Muslims out of Spain, the Muslims and the Jews, and they came to the New World to start all over and kind of find a new place. But they brought so much of the Islamic motif with them in their building. This place is just from Morocco or somewhere. It was just amazing with the influence that they brought with them. So even though they drove the Muslims out of Spain, after 800 years, you still had something inside of you that was joined together a little bit. All along Lake Titicaca are these terraces. Now these are being used, but there are some that are primitive terraces that these people have used for hundreds and thousands of years, really. And the Incas believe that the original Inca came from Lake Titicaca in an island they call Island of the Sun. And so this is started the origin of the agriculture system that the Incas used. And Jenny's going to tell us a little bit about the agriculture that the Incas finally developed. Can you see all right up there?
Yeah.
Can you read all right?
Yeah. People of the Andes have always been very successful and creative in agriculture. One of the greatest contributions comes from the cultivation of the potato. The Incas developed a freeze-drying technique for preserving potatoes. At certain altitudes in the Andes, it freezes every night and is warm and sunny in the daytime. So for a week, the potatoes are frozen at night and dirt and dry during the day. This allows a potato to be stored for long periods of time. Some of the freeze-fed potatoes are used in stews, while others are ground up into flour. It took over 100 years for the Europeans to believe that potatoes were edible and not some mysterious voodoo herb. The Incas also invented drying meat into jerky. The Quechua word for jerky is charqui.
So freeze-drying came from the Incas and jerky. In Quechua, it's jerky. So, you know, you ever sit around and say, jerky, what a strange name. Where does that come from? Well, it comes from Quechua, jerky. So, land erosion and for agriculture, so both. And a lot of these are not being used today, and they're trying to get people to use them again. You can see a line going across the middle, kind of there. That's an irrigation canal. And the Incas were really great at moving water, and they could just irrigate everywhere. I'll show you a valley later that's just beautiful from irrigation. Yeah, they have the winter and the summer seasons there. So it's just more sun, less sun, a little bit colder, and some rain, but not heavy rain. This is a shot of an Aymara woman. Again, the Quechua people were the Incans up in the Andes, and the Bolivian area were the Aymara. And the women, you'll see in a lot of pictures, the women all have different hats on. And these hats were modeled after the Spanish riding women's hats that they wore. So you'll see like five or six different styles, but they picked them up from the Spanish riding women. And these people wear real billowing skirts with five or six skirts on, and they also picked that up from the Spanish riding women when they came, and the petticoats that they used to wear when they were riding. So a lot of the styles today are derived somewhat from the Spanish and then modified. This is a valley between Lake Titicaca and Cusco. I was going on the train across them. Just can't believe the remoteness. But I heard that there's a developer, if you folks want to get in on the first hand, a developer going to put a little condo in a supermarket up there. So, just a little number of looks. This is Cusco. This is the was the Incan capital. And the Incas laid this out in the shape of a puma. And the Spanish came in and they liked the grid kind of shape, so they put the cathedral down in the bottom part of the picture you see there and then laid everything out in the plaza. All the cities are now plazas and then all these grids going out. But the Incas did not believe in time as being important. They believed in spatial relationships as important. So everything they did was laying things out in a spatial relationship to the stars and to the sun. Everything was laid out that way. So time, temporal things, meant nothing to them. Life and death was nothing. It was how you arrange things on Earth to reflect the natural elements and to kind of tie in with the natural elements. So everything to them was laying things out spatially. So when the Spanish came and changed the city, it just kind of threw their world way out of whack. Spanish did enough as it was, but just totally reorienting everything. The Incas used thatch, and then the Spanish brought the tiles, so everything's the same. This is part of the old Inca wall that's still intact. And the music we hear today is, the Andean music is kind of a, through several generations has changed, but the Incas used to have people marching. They used to march a lot, and they had a steady kind of tempo back then. And Ruth and George are going to play you a little bit of the steady tempo that the Incas originally used in their music. The Incas, again, the spatial orientation, all their building, they put so much work into the looks of it and the feel of it. Back on this the slide before, you can see the blocks aren't just cut, they're indented, they have indentations around the edges. And this would give it a different kind of effect. And so this was very important for them. So they spent a lot of time doing this when they wanted it for show. And then they would, this was one of the remains of the Temple of the Sun. And this is where the gold was. And this rounded part there was a part of the foundation of the Temple of the Sun. The Incas slanted most of their buildings in because they were having trouble dealing structurally with things kind of collapsing. So they slanted these things in so it would give you a little bit more tension so things wouldn't fall out as quickly. But the earthquake, the Temple of the Sun was here. The Spanish took a lot of it and cut it up and used it to build other things. But they left the foundation because the foundation was so good. But they built their church on it, the Church of Santo Domingo. In 1956, there was an earthquake, and Santo Domingo was just demolished. But the Incan foundation was left intact. Then the people decided that, well, the Incan foundation is more important than the Church of Santo Domingo. So we want to rebuild the church, but we want the Incan foundation to be seen. And so they opened up a lot of the areas where the Incan foundation was and used it in the building of the church. So this is the part, a little bit of the remains of the Temple of Gold. Now I have a couple guests today. Francisco Pizarro is here in Atahualpa, the last of the Incas. And we might need a little light to have them be able to do their thing up here. They'll tell you a little bit about their meeting.
I, Francisco Pizarro, with only 168 men, have captured the Inca ruler Atahualpa. Even though the Inca had 80,000 men around him, he allowed me to come into his presence because he thought that I was another god who was coming to visit. The Incas have given us the Quechua name of Yanqui, which means outsider.
If you set me free, I will fill this room with gold all the way up as far as I can reach, then fill it again 2 times of silver.
Now, when Atahualpa said, fill that room up once with gold and 2 times with silver, up as far as he could reach, that room was 17 feet by 22 feet. The original room was 17 by 22.
I don't believe you can do as you say. It's possible to have this much gold, even though you are the Inca god who control the whole empire.
Just in the Temple of the Sun in Cuzco alone, there are life-size gold statues of llamas and alpacas in the garden of solid gold trees and flowers.
But I'm sure that your people will not allow this gold to be taken from the temple. When we take all of these beautiful handmade statues and melt them down into solid gold bars, we will have a fortune.
The gold has no value to my people. If I am killed, they will have no connection to the sun god. The gold is meant to honor the sun. The gold is used to reflect the beauty of the natural world.
What do you people have for money?
They need money to buy clothes and have a decent life.
We have no use for money. The Inca Empire is organized so everyone has what they need. Everyone works and contributes one-third to the government, one-third to the priests, and offerings to Inti, the sun god, and one-third is left for the person for personal use. As long as a person contributes their share, they will receive the food and clothing that they need.
I just can't understand how you people can be happy with such a simple life. You can't really appreciate the beauty and joy of life. My European cultural and religious background doesn't provide me with the knowledge to understand your way of life.
just because you don't understand us doesn't mean that you need to destroy our beauty of lives the way that you destroyed the beauty created in our gold work.
Old Incan Foundation in comparison to the new, modern, high-tech work that they do. This was a temple or a house that was built in honor of serpents, and they had serpents carved into stone all around. You can see it took a little bit of work. You just didn't carve out a piece. And the Incas liked to put things together with, they didn't use mortar, so all these are put together without mortar. And again, after all these earthquakes and things, they just haven't moved. They liked to use different shapes, so everything wasn't uniform. They liked this kind of a flow to things, so they used different shapes to give it kind of a shimmer, kind of a flow. It's where they, some cultures did, you know, painting and stucco work, but the Incas were very simple, and they would put a band of gold or something on a building, but generally their structures were quite austere. They liked the sun, the shadows, to do the coloring for them. So there was no painting originally on that. This might have been painted afterwards, because what happened, that temple of the serpents, which the Spanish had trouble with the serpents on there, they used it, you can see here the doorway, and they changed it, a man built this, used it as a house, and then he kind of went out of favor, and then it turned into a convent. But when the man owned it, you can't see him too well, but there are two mermaids up above the doorway there. He put mermaids on to kind of blend the snakes in with the mermaids. That kind of gave it a marine effect rather than a religious veneration of snakes. Here are three Cana players. And as I was traveling there, music was also an interest of mine. But also the music in relationship to the people. And often in these places you would see people playing the cana or playing the harp. And it was like you just gave them money because they were beggars. But I'd read a couple books, and one of them talked about the experiences of people who play for money, and they feel that they are musicians and they are artists and they spend years at this, and it just so happens that they choose to play their music, even though the music wouldn't make them money, and so people look at them as beggars. And so it changed my way of thinking a little bit. As I was coming to Cuzco, I thought, I want to see when I get there, when these people are playing, if I can appreciate their music and not just give them money because they're a beggar. And so I came upon this man. The story I had read was about a harp player, a blind harp player. And in Cuzco, here was a blind harp player. And George and Ruth have I want to give you a difference in the melodies that they would play. They talk about two different kinds of melodies. One is the Guarabi, which is the deep, soulful Andean music, and the other one is the Huayno, which is a more of a high-paced, dancing, light music. So the beggars play the Guarabi when they really want to play their own music and they don't care if anyone gives them money. And they play the Huayno when they want to attract a crowd and just have people throw money in. Those were two parts of El Condor Pasa. One was the Yarabi, the deep soulful kind, and the other one's kind of the higher, lighter type. As I sat here listening to this man play the harp, his wife with her girl came along, and they sat down and they were talking to him. It was really interesting. Again, my perception, I was really glad that this had happened, allowed me to stay a little bit longer, listen to him, and to see this that here is this man who plays, and his wife comes and talks to him. He's not just a beggar hanging around. He's got a family, he's got a life, and all, you know, things that we forget about people, that all people have life going on. And I was really pleased that this had happened, that she came along just at that time. She also has a headdress on. You know, it's a little bit different than the other one. Again, going back to the Spanish. The Cusco itself, again, was the Incan capital, and then the Spanish came along, and they have some very nice, the area is very nice here. It has a Spanish city today. As Rosemary's commenting on the tile, the Incas used pitched roofs. The Incas had very pitched roofs because of the rain that does come into this area. Then the Spanish came along and just used Incan houses and put the tile on. So they didn't have to change very much. Now, when the Spanish came, one of the things they did bring that the Muslims had brought to Spain was the guitar. And so the Incas had no stringed instruments. All they had were wind instruments and drums. And so the Spanish brought the guitar and the strings so they could have the harps. And George and Ruth are going to play a number that kind of brings this together, the Incan wind instruments, the Andean wind instruments, and the new, the old world's guitar. Right, there's a mandolin up there. George is telling me, I got to tell him it's a guitar, and I found a slide that had a mandolin in it. So.
The harp is
but it was the guitar that they brought first. No, it's... There's a shot of the turn-of-the-century Incan band. See, even back then, they still had mostly drums and their wind instruments for the local people. The strings didn't really catch on in the Andes as quickly. As I was traveling around, there were a lot of demonstrations, campesino rallies against the government for land reform. And this was one that I happened to come on in Cusco. And you can see the women in the background again, with different styles of costumes. Some have a kind of fedora style, the women have a stovepipe hat in the background. And the men wear their knit caps, which are modeled after conquistador helmets. So the Incan caps are from conquistador helmets. One of the men chronicled, as the chronicler at that time, King Garcilaso, has all kinds of hand drawings that he did of things. I have a few of them here, if you want. He's famous, though, because he did a whole book of chronicles and drawings, and he's the only one who really did much real objective. Most of these people were using their religious bias or whatever to draw things, but he did pretty good work. This is Quechua speaking. The Inca areas, the central Andes are Quechua speaking. I'm going to really take it next year. Oh, they speak Spanish too. If they come into the city, they'll speak Spanish. Now, some of these campesinos didn't speak Spanish. They spoke Quechua. So I wasn't really talking to them that much. When he's speaking to her, he's speaking Quechua. But then when he'd speak to someone coming by, he usually would speak in Spanish. Because he was living in Cusco, so if you live in Cusco, you have to really learn. There had laws on... In Peru, they're having a big thing about laws now. They're putting their money into irrigated lands down on the coast rather than the small plots up in the highlands. And that's what some of this was about. This is a fortress outside of Cusco. And this was built, they don't know really what this was. They think that there was a time when the Incan Empire was really ruled by two Incas right at the end. They're not sure. And they think this could have been the beginnings of that separation. But this fortress, people, archaeologists and people say that this rivals the construction of a lot of the Greek and Roman buildings. And when you look at how small the people are there, again, huge rocks, huge stone, that some of these they've got now looked at the content of these. Some of them came from 6 kilometers away. Others came from 30 kilometers away. So about 18 miles they had to bring these huge boulders and cut them up, either cut them up there or cut them up here. Some of them were cut out of this mountain here because there was some stone there they could use. But the others, definitely, they found the sources were at least 18 miles away in some cases. Oh, it's probably, it's hard to say, but it's probably it might have been filled in up to there or something. Again, the Incas had trouble with their foundations going out, so they really took a lot of precautions. And so they probably put the foundation very deep and then put something up there. The Spanish took a lot of this down and again used it to build the cathedral and other buildings. So this is just a structural part of it. The real city was up on the top. That's all been gone. The real good work was up on top. So probably they filled it in just through this foundation. Just by sheer labor. Ropes and people, lots of people. The Incas had a system of dragging. No levers, no wheels, no winches, no pulleys. No big trees. There are no big trees in that area. They're all tiny trees. The new trees they planted, eucalyptus, are bigger, but those have only been recently. No donkeys. All those things came with the Spanish. The horse, the donkey, the cow came with the Spanish. They had llamas, alpaca, and deer. The Inca, when the Inca came, the Inca did get into smithing. So they did have some tools. Not real strong tools, but enough that they could get a few crowbar type things and
some metal.
They could do a little bit of chipping and working some cracks and fissures and things. So they did have some metal work.
Mm-hmm.
So there are techniques they could use without metal. But the Incas did start smelting metal. Okay, so let's split them out again. This is the Urubamba Valley. This is the holy valley of the Incas. This is where they counted on to have all their grain taken care of. And you can see the terracing goes all the way up the mountains there. This is just the beginning of the terracing. The terracing was just exquisite in there, unbelievable. Again, the Incas used their canal systems up above to bring the water around. But this is leading down the valley towards, this is actually the one of the source rivers of the Amazon. So this is the beginnings of the Amazon, the Urubamba. And the Incas were really great on protecting the rivers. They built walls along the rivers and everything. The foundation of this little bridge, the big foundation there, not the cement block one, but the other one, is Incan, still from Inca times. And the big rock that's in the middle of the river there was put there to break the water flow so it wouldn't wash away the foundation. So they had some idea that, you know, how to protect their foundation. So they put that big rock in there to protect. They did this with all their bridges. And you see the primitive terracing all the way up the mountains there that's not used today, that the Incas had used. This is a shot of a place called Sacsayhuaman. No, this isn't Sacsayhuaman. This is Lotibambo. This was a place where the Incas, when they were on the trail, could stop and get refurnished and everything. So they had a lot of terracing here. And you can see the terracing had steps on it, so they could move from terrace to terrace, and really were transportation routes too. So this is a good idea of a very big terrace, a very well-constructed terrace. Some of them were smaller, much smaller. No, this is just all terracing. And then the city was up above. They didn't build their cities on fertile ground. They built their cities where it wasn't fertile. So you had to kind of do a little bit of work. They wanted their ground to grow things, not to put parking lots on top of it. Oh, it was very much. Because population had gone so much that they no longer depend on the fertile valleys. And so they used the terracing down in the valleys and on the coast. But the terracing is abandoned. And so if Peru has problems with food, they could use the primitive terracing, which they are now trying to think of how to use this again. So they're trying to do this again. It's called modern efficient use of the soil. You know, you have big farms, you don't have little terraces anymore. Right. And the people say, we want to go back to our plots and do this, but the government, and that's what that rule is about, the government won't give them the money to do this because it said it's a waste of our time. When they're showing now that it would be really beneficial to do this. And IMF, World Bank, and you know, exports and all this stuff. This is Machu Picchu. And this city was only discovered in 1916. It was the lost city of the Incas. And someone discovered it kind of by following up on old stories, and Hiram Bingham discovered this. And it supposedly was built, the last Inca, Atahualpa, when he was killed, the Spanish tried to make a deal with a new Inca and put a new puppet on the throne. And this puppet thought, well, the Spanish are going to kind of be nice to us after all. They'll take our gold and then they'll be nice to us. Well, they weren't. And so he got a little bit disenchanted. And he laid siege to Cusco, the capital, for a year and tried to drive the Spanish out. He couldn't. they think he retreated to this city, which was just another city along the way, and lived here until he died. With, they had about 1,000 people, they figured, lived in this city. 250 dwellings, about 1,000 people. That's what their speculation is. They don't really know. So they don't know what happened to this. But you can see the peaked roofs and everything. This is real reconstructed Incan dwellings there. And see kind of how they did it. There's an Incan thatched hut, reconstructed. This is about 7,000 or 8,000 feet. This is the great thing about Machu Picchu that, that people found there. When the Spanish would come into an Incan area, the Incas, you know, worshiped the sun. And they were the big ones on the solstice when the sun was going to leave our realm. And this is called the hitching post of the sun. So the people would get out there, the elders, the people who knew how to stop this, and say, all right, if you folks do all you're supposed to, we will keep the sun from going away. And this is what they would use to hitch it on. Now the Spanish, when they came in, they knocked off the top of all the hitching posts of the sun that they found, but they never found Machu Picchu. So this is the only hitching post of the sun that is left intact. So it's kind of a great thing to see in there. And looking over this valley, I mean, everything you do up in Machu Picchu is looking over this beautiful Urubamba Valley. It's just unbelievable. Well, the religious thing, they wanted to bring... See, the Catholic Church and the Incan bureaucracy were pretty much the same. All they wanted to do was knock off the top down, and they had control. And so they just tried... They really made some attempts to understand the Inca and the Quechua so that they could take over their system and not lose the organization that the Incas had in place. So they wanted to keep that intact. And that's, they did a little study. So they said, well, we'll just knock this off and tell the people there's something else, there's a better way. To be honest, totally economic and political. You know, the religious was just, this is the way up. You can walk and it takes about 2 hours. I took the bus. I was walking around, I was walking around a lot. I just didn't move. That's a road.
The bus went up that road.
Yeah. Took the bus 20 minutes. This road is just a dirt road. This is the Incan jail in Machu Picchu. The Incans didn't like anyone to be lazy. They said, all you have to do is a little bit and we'll provide for you. So they would put people, lock them in this thing. They had little loops. They would loop them in and kind of beat on them for a while till they... The Incas had a greeting that kind of said when you met someone, you said, don't be lazy, don't be whatever, and don't be something else. And the people would say back to them, and don't you be it either. So that was their common greeting. So they didn't like people to be lazy. They liked them to be working and doing things, carrying their load. Up here, a city of 1,000 people, it was pretty hard to escape, you know, and do something else. Getting a shot of the valley there. Yeah, probably, a telephoto wide angle from Machu Picchu. I went up on that big peak you see always, so I went up on there. I stayed in a little city down below there with that for archaeological or ethno-historical value. It was really amazing. This little city, the only way to get to Machu Picchu is to walk the Incan Trail over the mountains or to take the railroad in. And so this little city, Aguas Calientes, was down below. And I stayed in there, and they people live around the train, you know, coming and going. And they grow corn in that area, all in the Andes, and they make beer out of it called chicha. And whenever anyone has chicha that they freshly brew, they'll put this little red flag out. Now they'll put a little red rose out. They have a big plastic rose they put out too, but they put this flag out so you can go and have chicha. Chicha's been the real thing that kept the Andean people going for so long. Chicha and coca. It's good. Here's the people waiting for the train. Corn, potatoes, barley now is a big crop because barley can be grown at a very high altitude, where even higher than corn or anything else. So they grow a lot of barley now. Just a little bit of political interjection here. These were all over the place. Yankee assassins, you know, freedom for Grenada. And This is all over. All over, everywhere I went. Little villages, big villages, everywhere. So I just couldn't escape it. Oh, that's fine. They know it's the government. They know it's not the average person. It's the government, so.
You know.
Yeah. This is a rally I saw up in Quito on Allende. We will always follow your example. They were had a guy up there playing a guitar and singing folk songs and things, kind of just like our Pete Seeger rallies and things here. No, I think we have someone here who can tell you about that. Yeah, I know it's a big radio station, a big deal. This is Otavala. This is the what they call the quiet market. Everyone, when they deal here, they deal very quietly. They don't yell and scream, all right, I'll give you this, I'll give you that, you know, and you knock it down and all. They say, all right, here's the price, take it or leave it, you know. And you walk away and they don't come running after you and throw it at you or whatever. It's just very quiet, very subdued. It's a famous market where a lot of these big heavy knit sweaters come from. Here's a man way in the wool to buy it. And all the women, the Otavalan women, wear gold beads around their neck. And now these gold beads come from their Czechoslovakian tree ornaments. They look nice, but that's where they get their imports from now. Oh, they're kind of that, yeah, that, whatever that, what they make tree ornaments out of. That stuff that breaks easy. Yeah, so it's not a glass, it's a fragile bubble type of thing. Oh, I was really at a discreet distance. I really had, a telephoto lens for most of this. I don't believe in intruding in people's lives. In fact, I didn't go to some places just because it would be an intrusion. And so I was across the street when I was doing this. They weren't aware I was around. A couple of them would be. You know, they were kind of just sitting there, gazing off, chewing their coca and stuff, and looking. So, right. This quiet market, like I say, was so quiet, it's just beautiful. And then this truck rolled up with a loudspeaker on. I thank George and Ruth and David and Jenny and Dana for joining in with me. Okay, all right, we'll just let it go at that then. I know there are probably questions, but I'd rather, since my things always tend to go long, that I'll talk to people afterwards if you have questions. I don't want to have it so the kids are held downstairs, so. No, that's the original version of Andean dress. It's a, they grow a thing in the Andes called quinoa. This it's a grain-like thing, it's little circles, and they use it. And this was close to the quinoa dress.
It's an edible. Reddish.
Yeah, it's edible. It's really highly nutritious.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah. So.
I wanted to have everyone give Dave a hand for a good program today.
Yeah. Yeah.
One final thing, I've got some things hanging up here. I'm willing, there's a chart of South American archaeology for people who really want to get a more of a scope on where Tiwanaku or the Incas fit in and what's going on there. And I'm willing to ask questions about them afterwards. This motif in the middle is from the Tiwanaku, the gateway of the sun that they use in Bolivia. Also some things back here, some Incan pottery, and some Nazca pottery, and some mummy things that they put in mummy bubbles in Incas. And I kind of want to close, I started with saying, well, we'll put the political stuff up on the shelf, but I want to close with realizing that something has been going on. There's a little poster on the back there, and I'll read you part of what's there. Simón Bolívar, this is his 200th anniversary of his birth this year. And so, 150 years ago or so, he said, "The United States appears destined by Providence to plague America with miseries in the name of liberty." And that I thought that was something that he said that. He recognized that the United States is going to be involved here in the name of liberty. And then when you hear Barry Goldwater say, extremism in the name of liberty is not a vice. You know, so this whole thing, we're still there. Simón Bolívar identified that 150 years ago. So I kind of feel there's something going on, even though we're kind of not involved in politics. I think this year really is a critical year. I say, do we break a cycle now, or do we just let it kind of go rolling along? So it's been 150 or 200 years that our involvement has taken up in South America and Latin America. So we're not going to close with El Contrapasa after all. We thought we'd let it go.